Joyful Manifestation is being broadcast live on iHeart, iTunes, and many, many other stations.
Hi, this is Sugandhi Iyer for the Joyful Manifestation Show, the High Vibration Show. Welcome back. Joyful Manifestation and the Good Fortune Show have been trying to bring you some very interesting people to talk to or to hear from. And today we have Maitreya Ma. She is actually Miss Nolan, I think. And however, she likes to be called Maitreya Ma. Maitreya, are you here?
Yes, I am. Hello. It's good to be
here. Hi. Thank you so much. You were here on our last show.
Yes.
And we have you here back again today. And we want to pick your mind. Let's be honest.
Okay.
We're here to pick your mind. We are here to ask you things. We're here to find out about who you are and what you do and the fantastic book that you have released, Into the Heart of the Infinite. Today, I'm really interested, Miss Nolan. Is that a right way to call you, or is Maitreya better? Well,
you can call me Maitreya, but if you want to call me, it's Dr. Nolan.
Dr. Nolan.
Maitreya.
So I'm going to kind of do a combination of the two during the show.
Okay.
Dr. Right. Nolan. Wow. So, Dr. Nolan, how is it that you're able to combine a very practical career in psychology and your education that has given you the doctor title? How are you able to combine that, this fantastic spiritual journey that you were on and still are on? Do you feel that the practicality of the scientific background and the spiritual background, do you think that they clash or that they're complementary?
Oh, I think they're very complementary. Sugandhi, I feel that my I got into my spiritual life before I went back to school to become a psychologist and to get my PhD. And I really liked, I was really deeply into meditation already, but I wanted some way to express my spiritual feelings, you know, some kind of way I could be in the world and bring my thoughts and my feelings forward. And so I realized that psychology was probably a really good venue to be able to express spiritual understanding. And so what I did is I searched around and I found the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. It was called ITP at that time. It was near where I lived in Menlo Park, California, just south of San Francisco. And I decided that it was really the way that I could earn money and support my family and also be able to express myself in the world. And so I went to the school, and it was a very powerful experience. It was a spiritual experience to go to ITP because it was a school founded by people who were dedicated to not only the psychological but the spiritual aspects of human life. And so it was transpersonal psychology. And we had some famous Roshis, and Kenneth Roshi came, and there were Rinpoches, and there were different transpersonal teachers who came. So we had a lot of visiting faculty who were really spiritual figures, as well as our regular faculty who were outstanding people. And so it added to my spiritual life a great deal, because it exposed me to all kinds of things, from Bentoff to and exercises we did on stopping time in his classes, to doing Zen tea ceremonies with Kenneth Roshi, to Sufism and Sufi masters coming through, and all manner of things. And I was already very established in my yoga meditation practice, and I'd had a lot of deep experiences, and I already had my inner guru, Baba, I felt with me, guiding me. And so being in this milieu was just expansive spiritually, as well as, you know, psychological courses, of course, and really studying the interface between the spiritual and the psychological, and what's the difference between spiritual emergence and spiritual emergency, what's the difference between spiritual, the kind of powerful kundalini awakenings and spiritual experiences that people have, and divine guidance, inner guidance, and the psychosis, you know. So those were a lot of the sort of cutting edges of defining that, and I worked with other people to work with that. I was the director of the spirit. After a while, I became the director of the Spiritual Emergence Network, which Dan and Christina Groff started. And I worked a lot with a hotline with people having all sorts of unique experiences, from kundalini openings to possession. There was everything, and all sorts of psychic phenomena. And so I got to really work with people with these different types of experiences and help them out and sort of be able to distinguish between them. And then I collaborated with some peers to get the diagnostic manual changed so that there was a area for spiritual emergence in a V code, that it wasn't considered. The symptoms wouldn't just fall under psychosis, because when people are going through spiritual emergence experiences and kundalini awakenings, they have a lot of powerful experiences, and oftentimes there's a destructuring of life before it restructures. And in that, you know, they're getting inner guidance, they may become, they're having all sorts of sensations and energies flowing through their body, and odd things happening to them, and it can look a lot like psychosis, but it's really very different. And of course, the outcome is very different. Usually, people will proceed through these spiritual challenges and emergence experiences into deeper states of consciousness and deeper awakenings, whereas people who actually have psychosis, their messages they receive are usually pretty dark, usually pretty paranoid, and tend to not have a good outcome. You know, but sometimes it's a fine line sometimes to distinguish. So I worked a lot with that. Actually, when I was finishing up my graduate program at IT, Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. And after that, I moved on to working actually in a developmental center with people with developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities. And that was also a very deepening experience, quite out of line with the traditional spiritual, but an opening to more about consciousness and how consciousness manifests, and how people work with different disabilities. So that kind of moved me on until the point where, in my own journey, I actually got guidance when my guru left his body to teach. And then I also was working in the developmental center still, earning my bread and butter working part-time. And I had young children, you know, so I was very grounded in the world. But at the same time, I really, my own spiritual awakening really blossomed, and I had very powerful mystical experiences and guidance from my inner guru to begin teaching. And so I brought, I think, the knowledge that I had gained as a psychologist and working with all manner of people and the exposure that I've had, brought everything together so that I really was more able to move into these deeper realms and receive the kind of guidance that I ended up from the 1990s on doing, which was just letting go into divine presence and my inner guide, and then feeling the flow of Baba's grace and energy through me, and feeling that teachings just come. And I don't think about what I'm going to say. I don't plan anything. I just give these talks because they come from someplace that is not the rational mind. They come from the blessings of the divine. And so that's been really, I've been doing those talks ever since the 1990s. And that's been my work, and I've worked with many people helping them out in their spiritual life. But I've also worked with developmentally disabled, and about 5 or 6 years ago, I opened a private practice, and I've also been seeing people individually and working many with meditation. I also teach meditation to people, and so that kind of spiritual work, helping people to have solid practices. I am an acharya in my tradition, which is a teacher of the spiritual practices. And so I that's been kind of what I do and what I've been doing, and how my, I would say my professional life has interfaced with my spiritual life. I've been raising a family and living in community, and we have an ashram with 12 people living here. So I've been involved, and I was for many years involved with Ananda Seva, which is a community that I founded by the guidance of my inner guru and of people who had been devotees of my guru for a long time. And that community still exists, though I'm not so engaged with it as I once was. But it ended up being holding a lot of retreats, doing a lot of teaching, giving these spiritual Baba talks frequently, multiple times a day at retreats, holding acharya training people to be teachers in the tradition that I'm trained in. So it's kind of what I've been
doing. Dr. Nolan.
Yes.
Maitreya, what is transpersonal psychology, and is it completely recognized? And is this something that, let's say, some metaphysical people put together, or very well backed by the medical scientific field?
Transpersonal psychology is a over umbrella term for that which is psychological, for the study of the interface between the psychological and the spiritual elements of a person, so that you integrate understanding the psychology and the spirituality together, and the spiritual life. So, you know, we have our personalities and our individual and unique psychological makeup, and everybody has problems to one degree or another. Everyone has struggles. And so But a lot of psychology is just looked at kind of taking the personality and really not looking at how that is a part of the whole person as a spiritual being manifesting in this world. And so transpersonal psychology does that, and it incorporates all kinds of schools of psychology. So there's like Jungian psychology is transpersonal psychology. Asagioli psychosynthesis is transpersonal psychology. All manner of different modalities. There's now a lot of Buddhist psychology. There's yoga psychology. They're all psychological, psycho-spiritual fields in which there's an integration. And I feel that integration of the spiritual with the psychological is very important, because if you don't have an understanding of your need for Dharma, if your need for connectedness to the whole, your need for meaning, you know, like Viktor Frankl talks a great deal about the existential states and the need for meaning. And transpersonal psychology really goes into that need for meaning, the need to integrate your deep inner core self and the feelings of purpose, meaning, direction, spiritual connectedness, mystical states with your everyday life and your psychological makeup, so that you're a whole person and all of that is involved in you. And even the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which were written, 2,500 years ago or more, they really give practices which are the yamas and the niyamas. And that's one of my books, Living Love, The Yoga of Yama and Niyama, talks about this. But those are really, they're called ethical practices. But in actuality, they're ways to live in the world in such a way that you live in alignment with life force, in alignment with the universe and with the divine. And that alignment comes, for example, one of them is satya. Satya is being truthful. You know, on the surface, it's like, well, I don't lie much. but really, truthfulness that is benevolent and kind and deep, and being honest with yourself, truthful with yourself, deeply living in truth. If you really live in truth, you live with the unity of all life, because that's the deeper truth. So the closer you get to truth, the more aligned you become with the universe. And ahimsa, right? Ahimsa is not injuring others, not injuring living beings, or at least trying to not injure living beings. And ahimsa is another one of these principles that when you practice loving kindness, when you try to be compassionate and to not inflict injuries on others, and you try to live a lifestyle that is kind, it brings you into alignment. It changes you psychologically. So, yeah, it's an ethical principle that we should try to not harm living beings, but it's a psychological state of mind that influences who you are and how you feel about yourself. And if you really feel that your intent and no one can be perfect at it, but that most of your actions are non-injurious, you'll find that you feel better about yourself. You feel like, well, I'm a person who's good to other people and good to animals and plants. I'm a good person. And you can feel better about yourself. It helps your self-esteem. But it also helps everybody around you. It creates an atmosphere that's that's much nicer to be in for everybody who you're around. And hopefully it inspires other people to treat each other with loving kindness. And so if you really look, though, deep into ahimsa, deep into this non-injury, that in the deepest level, you develop a real harmony with all of life. You know, the image is kind of like Saint Francis, that the animals will just come up to you and they'll feel at peace because they don't feel any threat from you, because you've developed this harmlessness to the point where your compassion is so strong, it becomes like a power. Like animals will just come up, wild animals. They have no fear. And then there begins to be a kind of light in you, a connection to divine source. And so that alignment comes through working these principles and developing behavior that puts you into alignment with your cosmic source. So psychology and spirituality, I don't think, can be divided out. They're all in the path together, because growing spiritually is growing psychologically. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense, Dr. Nolan. And I have as clients doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, medical field people, and they work with me because they're really good at their field. You know, they're really good at what they do. Just like an actress could be very good at what she does, a singer could be great at what she does, but they may not know everything about everything, the spiritual side. You are one of the growing numbers of people that is well-versed with the spirit and with science. But not everybody is like that. And so when people from these professions who are intellectuals, but they have an issue which they are not able to solve using their intellect, then obviously, you know, I'm able to help them out. But you're also located in a great place, California. It seems that the root chakra is located on or in Mount Shasta, California. And it seems that Earth has chakras, just like the human person has those chakras. And so the root chakra is supposed to be located in Mount Shasta, California. And it's supposed to be considered the base of Mother Earth's energy system and regarded as a holy mountain by Native Americans. And so people feel energized when they go there. Do you have anything to say? Do you know anything about it at all? Or maybe you could just go into your spiritual mind and say something.
Well, I've never heard of it being the root chakra or a chakra of the... That's an interesting idea.
I was literally reading from Google right here.
Okay.
You'll find the same words on Google.
But Mount Shasta is a big part of my... I think that's my place in the world that I identify with. I've gone to Mount Shasta since my early 20s. And I really love it there. The power of that mountain is so amazing. And so I would go for 2 or 3 weeks and stay on the mountain and go up to Panther Meadow on the mountain and just meditate, you know, and meditate in other places on the mountain. I would go with friends or my husband and I just alone. And we would, this is before it was quite as known as it is now. It's kind of harder now because there's too many people. And the Forest Service has like limited where you can go, and they've walked paths. And anyway, it's not quite like it was. But we would be able to go for weeks up there basically alone. And it was very powerful. The energy of that mountain is very, very powerful. My husband's seen ferries in the streams, and they visited him, and so many people I know have seen different, like, non-corporal beings from different dimensions, but everybody can feel the energy on Mount Shasta. It's strong. And if you are meditative and you're sensitive to energy, you certainly can feel the vibration there. It's amazing. It's just a beautiful, amazing place. Although now it's like too known.
And the crown chakra is supposed to be in Mount Kailash, the heart chakra somewhere in UK, United Kingdom. And so they have established that some of the chakras are in certain important areas around the world, and they're supposed to, just like the chakras work for the human body, it works for Earth as such. And so there is a lot of mystery and magic around all of this. And I have heard that many ancient Indian sages would travel. I don't know if they time traveled or they really traveled to California to meditate there. So California has a very ancient connection with India, Indian sages, Hinduism, the whole spiritual thing. And no wonder that California is able to come up with so many amazing people who work out of California. I have personally lived in California for a few years, but Maitreya Ma, see, I've gone to your spiritual name now, and how do you feel? Because Ma means mother. Yes. Am I right? And Maitreya, yes. how would you define that? Maitreya Ma, the whole two words together.
Maitreya means spiritual friend or friend of God. And Ma, of course, means mother. And so I'm of an age to be a mother. So
Divine mother, can we say that?
Well, that's pushing it, I think. I'm comfortable with that. But I do have a deep spiritual connection, and I do try to take care of people. So Maitreya is, but I think that my deep connection is not so much in the care of people even as in my connection to the God self, and that feeling that I'm connected to and deeply devoted to the one divine self, the infinite one.
And how would you take the spiritual side of you and the very practical scientific side of you and connect that to your book, Into the Heart of the Infinite? And, you know, sometimes I say infinite because that's me, my Indian accent, and this and that, put mine together.
I'm infinite. I like it that way. Into the Heart of the Infinite. A spiritual memoir of an extraordinary mystical journey. So this book is about my mystical journey. It's about, it goes into my professional life and my family life. But it really, I've written this book because I think that spiritual unfoldment comes, sometimes it's really helpful to read other people's experiences so that you can, it helps you relate to your own experience, and to also, it's my hope that by reading this book, people feel supported in their own spiritual journey and in their own mystical experiences, because there has been for many years a lot of taboo about mystical experience. You know, people talk about coming out being gay, but I think there's also coming out being a mystic. And it's almost more taboo than being gay, you know. People, we have this kind of straight and narrow about life, and when people start having all these experiences of non-ordinary consciousness, it's just out there. And so There's been it's really opening up now, but there's been in our society for many, many years a sort of a taboo about it. And a lot of people keep their spiritual experiences and their mystical life very private because they don't feel comfortable. Like their friends might not really, you know, understand it, or they might think they're weird. And so people keep it to themselves. And so a book like this, I'm hoping that it can open people up to feel comfortable with their own experiences. I think for Indian people in India, there's such a rich tradition that it's not as much a problem as in Western culture. But I think in the United States and Europe, it's a bit more, particularly in the United States, it's a bit harder to come out with your spiritual life and share it with your friends and family. And, you know, they might think you're weird if you start saying all the unique experiences you've had. Maybe you saw someone appear before you and talk to you, and then they walked off, or you were suddenly enveloped with a white light, or you saw fairies, or you had an experience of different dimensions and different dimensional beings. Is it just, there's all kinds of experiences that people have. And I think it's really helpful to know other people's experience. So I wrote this book, and it really records my journey, which started when I was a child with mystical experience and has gone through my life. And it's been a deep and powerful opening of spiritual transformation. And so I wanted to share that for people, to support people in their own transformation. And so I have shared this book. And as I go through it, I go through my deepening understanding and the struggles I went through to, you know, with doubt and fear and self-judgment and feeling like I was crazy, you know, at times. There's been really struggles at different times, and finding my way through all of it, and a lot on my own because I didn't have anyone to turn to it a lot of times. And then finding my way to a real non-dual reality. And for me, one of the big things was overcoming seeing the world as boring and mundane compared to the incredible awe and beauty and of the white light and the divine presence, which was just so, you melt into it, you know. But then I would come back into my ordinary life and I would go, this is not nearly as nice as that, you know. But then through years of meditation and teaching and everything that I've done, it really began to open to the truly non-dual reality, that the divine is just as present in every blade of grass and every tree and every animal and every person, in every living being, as in that infinite bliss, divine state of the pure light and the pure love. It's embodying in all forms. And for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear, the beloved is everywhere.
And by beloved, you mean?
The divine beloved, the infinite one.
The God presence.
Yes.
By whatever name anybody wants to call it.
Yes, correct. Right. We have different ideas, different Brahma, Shiva, Krishna.
Buddha. Dr. Nolan, and see him back to your professional name again, because it is so amazing, wouldn't you say, for all those who are listening here, that it is possible, so possible, to connect the scientific world to the spiritual world. And walking together, they explain each other. In fact, the way I see it, and this is something that I read, again, I can't validate it, but you know, it's on Google. Google Guru. Correct. It's like Google Guru. But I did read, and forgive me, everybody who have more information about this, but I'm just trying to give you a gist because I really don't remember the actual words. But it seems that something to do with rain and thunder. And the fact that thunder and lightning exist so that the electrical field from Earth does not disappear, and that it would disappear in, let's say, 5 minutes if thunder and lightning were not there. Now, once I read this, and remember, I think of things in terms of God, but let's look at the specific way of the scientific way, correct? They actually say that thunder and lightning, if it did not exist, if they did not exist, the electrical field of Earth would disappear in 5 minutes. Now, Dr. Nolan, I'm bringing your scientific name here, the scientific title, I'm bringing that in right now. Because wouldn't you say this can't just be a coincidence that thunder and lightning, if it did not exist, the Earth's electrical field would disappear in 5 minutes? Wouldn't you say that this is not just a coincidence that just something happened because of the Big Bang and blah, 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 and then this happened and that happened, but that there was somebody, a being, an infinite wisdom that knew and put into place all of these things, you know, like the checks and balances, so that Earth would be fine? Wouldn't you say that a mind actually worked on it and basically calculated all of these things, put it into operation, manifested it so that Earth can function properly? And if that is the case, wouldn't you say God is the biggest scientist?
Well, I don't know anything about meteorology, so I can't say about thunder and lightning. But
if that were true, let's just say if that were true. Yeah. Since I read it on Google, let's just say if that were true, wouldn't you say that God is the biggest scientist?
Yes, but the one thing is that I really want to get away from the God. I sometimes don't use that term because it means so many different things to different people. It has so many meanings for people. And one thing is, I think that my understanding of God is not some person who's in heaven, but that it's a little bit more of the traditional yogic understanding that there is this purusha, this consciousness, which...
That is what I meant by God, but the all, the infinite, the thing that pervades everything, that contains everything,
right,
that is everywhere. But we're just using the word God because, you know, of the simplicity of the term.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the consciousness and the Mother Nature or Purusha and Prakriti, you know, the divine Shiva and Shakti, the divine consciousness and in
the
understanding is that everything is in one mind, that we exist within the mind of the infinite, that we are like a dream in the mind of the infinite. Not that we're a dream, but there is a relative reality to this world, but there is a non-relative reality to this omniscient, intelligent consciousness, which is ever the same, which is which is always as it is. There is no time, no space, no difference. It is as it is. But in the manifest world, as the Lady Prakriti or Mother Nature manifests creation, there by the laws of nature, and those are scientific principles that living beings come about, and through the five elements, as the five elements form denser and denser layers of reality or dimensions, then the physical world comes into being when you have the earth element present plus all the other elements, right? Then you have a material world. So it goes from, if you imagined a circle at one, the top of the circle, you have pure consciousness, unmanifest, meaning there's no created universe. There's just pure being And in that, there's not even mind. There's just pure being, pure unconfined, undefined being. And then as it begins to slowly move around the circle, it's pulled within this whole of consciousness. Movement develops, and you have movement by something called the three gunas, or sattva, rajas, and tamas, or sentient principle, the mutative principle, and the static principle. And out of those form the five elements, and this is all sort of an operational formation within the mind, within this consciousness, as consciousness takes movement and form. That's mind, and it's and these creative principles and this creative energy creates all that is. And then finally, when it comes to matter, out of matter, consciousness emerges again to form sentient beings. And then the sentient beings move in their evolution. As we evolve, we become more and more subtle, and there's more sentience and less, like a person who is really crude will be very material. There will be the static principle will dominate. But as they become more subtle, then the consciousness becomes more dominant. And then again, consciousness dissolves back into itself as we recognize the unitary whole of being, that all of this and all of us are in the mind of the infinite. We're all embodiments of the God self. We're all dancing in the dance of creation, garden of the divine. This manifest universe is holding a relative reality, but what's the permanent reality is that infinite unitary wholeness. So we're not separate from the God self. We are in every molecule, every atom of existence, in every aware consciousness, divinity, the God self is embodying. Like we're like, it's as if the divine is the moon and we're the little puddles in which that moon is reflected, right? We have all that activity and capacity.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Dr. Nolan, so when I travel by plane, and this happens regularly to me, when I travel by plane, if there is any bumpiness, turbulence or any bumpiness, and I can feel it coming.
Yes.
And then when I divert my mind, what happens is when I divert my mind means I get busy with something else, not just sit in my seat and watch a movie. But when I disassociate myself with the plane itself and I do something normal, let's say I go to the restroom or something to divert and go speak to the air hostesses or something which is not connecting me with the movements of the flight. What happens is the skies calm down immediately.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Immediately. It's almost as if the turbulence starts to enter my energy because of being part of the plane, maybe to scare me, like, hey, look, we're scaring you. You're in a roller coaster. Get scared. So Gandhi, get scared. We're here to scare you, right? But then what happens is the second, I divert myself, go to the restroom, start walking around, do something that does not connect me to the body of the plane itself. What happens is clear, calm skies immediately. And so then that makes me wonder, my consciousness is pervading things, and things are pervading my consciousness. And as we shift our consciousness into something else and not get drawn in by whatever is happening, there is a shift. And how would you explain this in because you're a scientific person, you're a spiritual person, and maybe you could come up with something.
Well, I think that's an amazing experience you're having, you know, and if
every
you
every time, Dr. Nolan, every
that's
time.
Amazing. I think it's, you know, it's the way the infinite talks to us in different ways, and maybe that's part of how it's talking to you, and you're receiving the grace of that, because that like opens you up, expands you when that happens. And so, you know, if you imagine that the sky, the plane, all the people on the plane are all part of an interwoven, interconnected whole of being. And that this is all within the play of consciousness within God, within the infinite, within Brahma, then isn't it possible that there's a draw of your soul to that cosmic soul? And in that draw, different unique experiences may happen, and you may find these kinds of things just occurring in your life.
I completely think so, Dr. Nolan, and which is why we need people like you. We need people like you who are a bridge, so to speak, between real hard facts, truth. I mean, facts, truth as in a practical, logical truth. I'm not talking of the infinite truth, but a bridge between the scientific world and the spiritual world. And we need people like you out there talking to people, explaining things to them, showing the correlation between what really happens in reality, so-called, you know, quote-unquote, so-called reality, and the spirit, how they function together to create the reality. And then it could help people understand the mystery of the world. And your book, Into the Heart of the Infinite, you know, for everybody who's listening, I know it sounds more spiritual, the title itself, but here is somebody who has a doctorate, who has written the book, and has, from her very practical mind, and combined with her spirit, and all of her, whatever and whoever she is, her beingness, has written this book, and I highly recommend that you all read it, all of you read it, and try to understand that this world comes from the creative force's mind. And it is not just what we see, but it is beyond what we see. And as we open up our imagination and our ability to comprehend, so many things in the world can get solved for us, because, you know, we're stepping into the unknown. Dr. Nolan, would you say that understanding this connection between the spirit and hard, you know, reality is really, really going to help people? And again, how would they get a hold of your book? I know you said that it's available on Amazon.
Yes, it is. It's available on Amazon. I agree with what you're saying. And the book is available on Amazon. And it's also available on my website, which is yogama.org. Yogama.org. And also, it, you can get it in bookstores. It may not be on the shelf. If it's not, you just ask, and they'll order it for you through Ingram Sparks. So it's available all over.
And they can look up your name.
Yes.
Maitreya Ma, and maybe you can spell out the word Maitreya. And Dr. Nolan, they can look that up, and they can find you on Google Guru. And also, if people want somebody to teach them on how to go about their path, they can contact you or work with you, and you can help them with different things. You have a wide range, I think, of matters and people that you could help people with. And yes.
Yeah, and if people do want to get in touch with me, they just go on to yogama.org, my website, and you will see that there's ways to contact me, but there's a form to sign up for my newsletter. There's a book that you can get on mysticism for free, and you can sign up for my newsletter. And when you do that, there's a little area at the bottom that you can write to me. There's also my mentoring program, and you can sign up to be part of the mentoring program. And I do have some satsangs each, like I try to do at least once a month, a public satsang where I open it up just if people, there are some other ones that I do, but they're a little closed. So I try to open one that's more for the public. But if you get on my newsletter, the other programs that are there are also in my newsletter. And yeah, I'm very available if people do want to learn meditation and get assistance with their spiritual guidance.
And they can also, you can also help them with normal psychological
issues, yeah, right? Although my psychology practice is really full.
Okay.
So I don't have openings as a psychologist.
Okay, so we do want you back on future shows because, again, I feel like we've hardly scratched the surface and there's so many things that we can talk about and dive into. And for you to talk to people, the movie Eat, Pray, Love, is that it? Julia Roberts?
Yes. Yes, I know that movie. I saw it. Yeah.
And, you know, she goes off on the journey. She goes to India and some other places, and she opens up her spiritual side. Of course, yeah. Everybody doesn't have to go to India for that.
Right.
You're there, right in the U.S. You're in California. And if they want that experience and they want to learn, they can still learn from you, correct? They may not all be able to go to India. What do you say?
Yes, I'm happy to teach people practices and to help guide them through their meditative journey and their spiritual opening.
And them coming into their awareness of who they are?
Yes.
That helps?
Yes.
In their regular life?
Yes.
Dr. Nolan, so we want you back. And I want to be in touch with you because I want you back on the show. And everybody here, the fantastic ability to be scientific and spiritual at the same time and not think that one is, what is that, woo-woo? Isn't that what they say? Oh, this is all woo-woo. You know, it's for those people who are up there flying in the sky and they're not grounded. In reality,
well,
I mean,
well, no, what's real? That's the question. What is real? What does
exactly.
It mean grounded in reality? You know, it may not mean being doing a lot of things in the material world. Is that just grounded in reality? It depends on what this material world is to you. It, you know, it can just look horrible or it can look beautiful. It can, if you're just caught in your patterns and your beliefs in the conditioned mind that is not necessarily being grounded in reality, that could be being trapped. So,
trapped in what is sold to us, correct?
By yeah, in your conditioned reality, right? And, and that trap is one of limiting your ideas of who you are and what you are. And the spiritual path to me is growing in love, growing and deepening in love, deepening in love. So that love, divine love is all around and you can feel that love and that care for all living beings and for yourself.
And that it is there to protect us. It is there to take care of us. It is to show us that life is amazing. And yes, I did get my 2 minutes warning. And I want to acknowledge that I did get that. And so we want to sign off. I want to thank Dr. Nolan Maitreya Ma for being here today, for taking time off. And as you can see, she did tell us her practice is full, her psychological practice is full. Yet she took time off to just come and talk to all of us. And we're very, very happy and appreciative of this. Dr. Nolan, we want you back again on the show. But until then, I want to say good night and a fantastic rest of the week for everybody listening here. We will meet again, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time next week, next Friday, for the Good Fortune Show. This is Sugandhi Iyer signing off for the show. And Dr. Nolan, do you want to say good night?
Yes, I do. Thank you for having me on your show. It's been delightful to be here. I'd be delighted to come in the future. And good night, namaskar, and well wishes to everyone who's watching this show.
This is Sugandhi Iyer signing off for the Joyful Manifestation Show. Have a wonderful rest of the evening.
Joyful Manifestation Show is now broadcasting live on over 100 digital stations. These stations include 24 foreign stations in over 13 countries and social media websites, which include Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. You can hear us live on iTunes, Spreaker, LA Radio FM, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, AHA Radio, and more. And you can always catch the podcast for the Joyful Manifestation Show on iHeartRadio, among others. Joyful Manifestation Show is heard all over the world. We'll take you where you want to go.